Good evening, one and all. Yes, I know. Thanksgiving out the way. Yes, I did enjoy my turkey, and I have turkey for the next last couple of days as well, because we had another one when I got home, because we were at family and that. But yeah, I enjoyed that. And now, of course, the next thing is we're nearly in December. I know. I did get a Christmas card today. I guess it is getting to that sort of level. But yeah, I am here, and so is my guest. Now, the name Charles Bukowski, does that ring a bell? Vague with me, because I think he was American, sort of writer come, well, all sorts. We'll find out a bit more about that in a minute. But yeah, and I think I remember something about it's about something like Diary of a Dirty Old Man, or letters, or notes from a dirty old man. Vaguely, not somebody that I really know about in England, sort of thing. But the New Yorker magazine said about this iconic LA author and poet, Charles Bukowski. He became wealthy and famous, a friend of celebrities like Sean Penn and Madonna. Yeah, both of them, eh? The subject of biographies and documentaries. In his late poems, his delight in driving a BMW and hobnobbing with Norman Mailer. He's so genuine, a genuine person. He became It was almost infectious the way it goes like that. Well, I'm going to find out a bit more about that now, because my guest today, he was a confidant of the late writer, and he's now penned a novella. That means a small book to you out there, but it's still a book. It's 136 pages, so don't you look at novella. It's really, really good. The sort of stuff about my length of writing, 136 pages, and they're small pages when I write as well. And he's used this knowledge and this influence, if you like, of Charles Bukowski in this novella. I better introduce my guest, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have author and screenwriter, the one and only Michael Malone. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Ta-da!
There
Yes, I'm here.
So, Michael, was I right? It's not a name I know very well. I vaguely remember something about something of a dirty old man.
Well, that was Notes of a Dirty Old Man.
Notes. Okay, right.
So yeah, that's right. When I was a teenager in high school, my friend Staley, who lived next door, had this little hut in the backyard with a bare light bulb hanging down, and we would hang out in this plywood shack and read Bukowski's Notes of a Dirty Old Man in the LA Free Press, which originated on the Sunset Strip, and it was full of racetrack junkies and winos and
A bit like Private
hookers
Eye used to be in England, yeah. Not
and
quite, but yeah.
It was a secret education for a young man.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how did you became sort of, well, a confidant in him? How did that sort of come around?
Yes, in 1980, my girlfriend Jan was working at a small health food restaurant in South Redondo Beach, LA. And the owner of that restaurant, Linda Lee Bailey, was living with Bukowski at the time.
Okay.
They weren't married yet,
Right.
but they were living together. And I had this idea that maybe someday I could write, or that I wanted to write, or I believed I should write. I hadn't really done much of anything at that point. I had, put on headphones and drank beer and pecked on a typewriter, but nothing much was really happening.
So nothing
But
much has
I
changed, is
thought, thanks a lot,
that's
pal.
okay. I couldn't resist it. I'm sorry.
So I engineered a meeting at Bukowski's house through my girlfriend and her employer, and I managed to be introduced to Bukowski, and we hit it off. He liked me, and we became friends. And between 1980 and the time of his death in 1994, we spent a fair amount of time together. His books at the time were being adapted for Hollywood movies.
Right. I was going to say something about movies. I'm sure there was, right?
Yeah, yeah. Many of the books were an Italian director, a Norwegian director, Barbe Schroeder, the French director. He directed a movie called Barfly.
That's the one I'm thinking of, right?
Barfly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, Barfly. It starred Faye Dunaway and Mickey Rourke playing Bukowski.
Yeah.
So I went to, I was able to go to the premieres of these movies, and you know, it was pretty exciting. And also I got to spend time alone with Bukowski, where he read my short stories and he really liked them a lot and gave me suggestions as to where I might send them. And I did, and they were bought and published.
Cool.
And, you know, so it really kind of kicked me off. I mean, it kicked off my, gave me confidence, and I was selling some work. And so I would say he acted as a mentor to me. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know you did, you know, you've traveled a lot. You've obviously England and also South Korea, I saw. But you actually met the real equivalent of Top Guns, didn't you?
I did. I was doing software work in a nuclear hardened bunker in the Midlands of England, RAF Lakenheath, RAF
right.
Mildenhall.
Mildenhall, yeah.
Yeah. In Sussex, yeah. And I was spending quite a bit of time up there and dealing with Top Gun fighter pilots. And it was very interesting and very discordant from the world of Bukowski. That's something that I wanted to explore in this novella, because the character, the protagonist, Ralph Hargraves, based on me, is being buffeted by a controlling father, his work in the defense world, a wild girlfriend, and the influences of Bukowski. So all of these things are mixing together to create a very rich tapestry of conflicts that are yanking this young man to and fro.
Okay, so it's sort of like almost a biography, but it's not.
Yeah, well, that's right. I didn't want to be held. Okay, here's what I would say. It's about 97% true.
Right, there you go.
With a little bit of embellishment here and there. But, you know, I didn't want to be held to the very rigid standard of this is a memoir, you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it pretty much is a memoir. Yeah.
And before we go any further, of course, the title of this novella is Pinball Wizard. I assume a link back to the music, but I'm
well, it actually has nothing to do with Peter Townsend.
There you go. Okay.
Although I'm certainly a fan of Peter Townsend and The Who and Roger Daltrey,
right,
and,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. But it actually has nothing to do with those guys. The reason I chose the name Pinball Wizard, well, it's a fictitious Department of Defense program at the end of the Cold War designed to collect locations of, you know, surface-to-air missiles and delivering that data to the Top Gun fighter pilots across Europe. But really, the reason I chose that name, because it's a metaphor for Ralph's existence at this time, where his boss asked him at 3 o'clock in the morning during a all-night coding spree at RAF Mildenhall, he walks in and he says, "Are you the pinball wizard or the pinball?" I think that's the driving question throughout the book is he able to take charge of his life, or is he just being ping-ponged back and forth between the paddles?
Go quick thing about The Who, and people who listen to my music program here on the show, on this station, know I've said about this. The Who never had a number one hit in England.
Wow.
Yep.
That's incredibly shocking.
I know. I did a whole show on number twos, and And it shocked me to find that they'd never had a number one hit. And I looked and I checked and I followed up. Yep, never had the number one hit.
That's
Yeah,
astounding.
I know, I know. It's quite shocking when you think they're still around. But perhaps they'll have a best of number one medley or something.
I saw them play at the Hollywood Bowl about maybe, I guess it was about 13 years ago with Zach Starkey on drums, Ringo's
Ringo's son,
son, who is a fantastic drummer. Zach Starkey is incredible. And I thought Pete Townsend on guitar was even better than he used to be in the old days. I mean, he's it was impressive that those guys really have still got it.
It's amazing. I saw about a month ago, month and a half ago, we went and saw what's it called? Happy Together Tour, which is, and within this tour, the people, there was the Vogues and the Association and stuff like that.
Right.
But there was Little Anthony, 84,
Love Little
still hitting
Anthony.
the high notes. And
Hey there, lonely girl, right?
Gary Puckett, 82,
Oh yeah, and the Union Gap.
still getting really good. The Turtles, there was a couple of the Turtles, they're not all there. And in fact, the lead singer of the Turtles now is the bloke who did the voice for the Archies in Sugar Sugar. Sorry,
Oh,
just with,
okay.
but Gary Puckett is very clever because all he does, he sings the first line of each song and then lets the audience sing the rest. Very,
Let the
very
audience
clever.
just chime in.
The
That
only thing is, he's got
sounds really fun,
way too
actually.
much hair for somebody of 82. That's the only thing I can tell.
Well, I think that I think that's the situation with Mick Jagger too, you know, like there's something going on with that hair, I think,
Something
you know.
going on, you're right. When you sort of set about this, obviously, you had this the story, you had the sort of the bits in it and everything like that that you were going to sort of mold into this. Was it something that you sort of always wanted to do, and it was just a case of you finally got round to doing it? What led you to actually write this?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it just sort of percolated up organically over a period of years. It just assembled itself. You know, I like from an intuitive place. I started writing certain vignettes, and I was able to glue them together in a way that made sense. But I think it started out writing certain standalone remembrances of things that had happened, and then they magically assembled themselves into a unified whole.
No, I mean,
And I'm
that's
not
good when
even sure exactly how that happened, but
when they sort of flow like that. It's when you pick the book up after you've written it and you look through it and you see these words and say, I don't remember writing that. Who wrote that? It's not words I use. It's you just get into the muse and just let it flow.
Right. That's
And it
right.
sounds
That's
like that's
right.
what happened. In writing it, is there sort of, apart from obviously working through the aspects of it and getting his own identity and how this was in your life, etc. Is there sort of morals, a sort of like, it's almost like a book that's got sort of a moral along the way in it. Is that something that's there?
Well, yeah, I think the young man Ralph, me, is he's conflicted about. I say in the book at one point that I'm not really a hawk, but I'm not just a rabid peacenik either. I'm in limbo. So he's feeling like there's a pivotal moment. And this actually did happen, where one of the fighter pilots was showing me in the cockpit of his F-111 fighter bomber, and there was a fluorescent orange metal tab hanging down. And he said with a kind of fiendish grin, "Guess what happens if I pull this tab?" And I shrugged and said, "No idea." And he said, "A lead foil shroud unfurls over my head to protect me after I deploy my nuclear ordnance."
Oh, wow.
And then he kind of grinned as if I was supposed to, you know, find that fiendishly gleeful.
Right.
And in that moment, I just thought, oh, my God, what in the hell am I doing here? You know, I mean, it was just like, wow. Because it was almost like a Dr. Strangelove moment that, so I felt that, so the character, and myself included, you know, I had to really evaluate, well, is this a good fit for me? Is this really where I should be? Is this what I should be doing? And I think those issues are tackled in the book. And at the end, Ralph makes some decisions about what he's going to do and how he's going to live. And so I think that's the trajectory of the book that you get when you read it.
Right. I mean, that's what I was thinking when I was saying about the sort of, you know, what it can help the reader with. It's almost like having faith in yourself, making the decisions and how you come to them and stuff like that. And, you know, using the example, you know, of that you, Bukowski, excuse me, let's stop. Using him as an example. Muddled up with it. It's that sort of thing that you've managed to get into the book.
Well, yeah, Bukowski, his take was that that art can be transcendent. You know, that the pursuit of your art and your muse can guide you and can take you into realms where you ought to be. And I think he really believed that, you know.
Right. You yourself, with your own writing, as you said, you've done sort of writing yourself and everything like that. I mean, you've done radio shows, haven't you? And Huffington Press, I remember.
I co-wrote radio. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, I know you also wrote for Huffington Press, didn't you, as well?
Yes, the Huffington Post. My brother and I wrote. Yeah, it's a well-known website in America. Yeah.
Yeah. So what radio shows did you do?
With a monologue artist named Joe Frank. He's gone now, uh-huh. But he was coast to coast on the NPR syndicate. And he and I co-wrote a number of radio shows that Joe was really a unique artist. He sometimes had a cast of characters, and it was very improvisational, and it was also drawn from real life. One time he had me go out on the street and record an incredible homeless, brilliant madman who was just riffing on the fact that Los Angeles was a hive of negative energy that was about to explode and pollute the entire world.
Wow.
And the guy could just rap at 100 miles an hour. And I recorded him, and Joe set that to music and put it on the air. So Joe was very experimental, and he and I co-wrote a number of radio shows, and it was a great collaboration. We were good friends for a couple of decades.
When you were writing Pinball Wizard, was there sort of a moment you've got writing it and you think, oh, crikey, I wish I'd have asked Charles about that before? You know, you thought, oh, crikey, I should have asked him about that. And you sort of left you thinking, now, what would he do here? Or what have I missed that he might have helped me with this book?
Well, I think I had a pretty good sense of how he would react to things.
Okay.
For instance, let me tell you one anecdote that really stands out to me. I went over to his house after I published a short story in Wired magazine. A powerful New York agent approached me and wanted me as a client, and so I went over to Bukowski's house to ask him what he thought about that. And he paused and took a puff from his little Indian beady cigarette, and he said, "Well," he said, "the whole thing comes down to this. If you want to write, you're going to write, and you better write it your way." He said, if you want money or fame or groupies, he said, "that's something else. And then they will smash you down into a flattened turd."
Oh, crikey.
and then he paused for a second, took another puff from the little beady, and then he goes, "Ring the bells of the city, the old man has spoken." And then he just started laughing. So he was willing to lampoon himself, yeah. You know, while he was delivering this message to me. And then at the end, there was this little stinger where he was kind of taking himself on. So I think I have a pretty good sense of how he would have reacted. Yeah. To most things, you know.
What sort of response have you had to Pinball Wizard?
Quite good. Yeah, I've been doing quite a few interviews, getting reviews. People are buying it. I post on Facebook and Twitter, etc.
So now you've got the one out of the way. Are you going to write something else like that?
Well, I've got two projects that are already ready to go. So I just have to package them and get them going. The next one will be, I have 5,000 Facebook friends, and over a period of years, I've been posting flash fiction and flash memoir shorts.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bundle all of those together, and some of them have photographs that go with it. So I'm putting together a book of all of those.
Oh, nice.
And then after that, I have a book of short stories, and many of those stories have been published in various magazines. So there are things in the wings.
That's good stuff. Good stuff. Well, time is starting to beat us. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Michael, so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your book.
I will do that. Yes, it's Pinball Wizard. Michael, last name is spelled M-E-L-O-A-N, and it is available now on Amazon, and also the website pinballwizardbook.com. That's all run together, pinballwizardbook.com. Gives information about the book, and it can also be purchased from that website.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It's been very interesting for me to find out something about, well, not just yourself, but also, you know, Charles Bukowski as well. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being a guest today.
I enjoyed it too. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today. What about that? Michael Malone. As he said, it's M-E-L-E. If I can move this. I can't move it. I can't. Here we go. M-E-L-O-A-N. Malone. I'm sure that's Malone. Michael Malone. And talking about his book, Pinball Wizard. Story of being a confidant to the iconic L.A. literature figure Charles Bukowski. There you go. Interesting. Very interesting, I found. Yeah, just finding out that sort of stuff. That's great, isn't it? Well, that's ended for today. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. And, of course, don't forget, on Sunday, I'll be here from 5 to 6 with Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. And we're into December, so I finally get round to doing a couple of Christmas shows before then, before Christmas. And then, of course, straight after that, from 6 to 7, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s. And then next week I'll be back with a couple more guests. But then, until tomorrow, there's only one thing left to say. Don't forget...